keep going.
Sometimes it feels like we don't, I don't want to do the preamble. Like, I'd just like to put the music on and let it go so I don't have to work any harder. And it takes me an hour to write those things up. I mean, you wouldn't think it would take so long, but you care. I care. I care about it for you. I care about it for me. I care about it for our listener. But now I'm like, maybe I just want to pull the Rick Rubin. Let's just drop it right on the track. Let's just drop it right on the track. Let it play. See what happens.
I'm into it.
What's our track today? What are we talking about today?
I need you to score my workout last night.
Oh, here we go.
So this is what I did. I went to the, I don't know what they're called, squat rack. Is it a fancier name than that?
No, it's, they do have fancier names. Depends on, was it on the rail?
No,
did,
no,
did I rail going up and down.
Sometimes I do the rail, but like that was back when I'm a novice. Yeah. I'm assuming I'm going to get a better grade this time. I go full. I don't even know the weight. Apparently, they have two different weights of the bars. One is like 45 and one
kilo.
Is 35.
Yep, it depends.
I'm a full bar kind of a guy. And so I walk up to the bar. It's the first thing I do. And I got all this from CrossFit like 120 years ago. But I put the rack up there. You know, I put the bar up kind of at my shoulders. I put it behind my head. I go behind the head. Mm-hmm. That's how we did the CrossFit stuff. So I remember that. I like the way it feels. And I'll do three sets of about 10 to 12 lunges, single leg kind of lunges. And then I'll do same position with the bar. I'll go, you know, do some squats.
So like a Bulgarian split squat, like a split squat? Or if you're doing lunges, you're staying in the same position?
I take a so
you take
the first workout I do is the lunge, and I do a back step.
Yep,
kind of
correct.
Do a back step.
Yep. Back and
out
of
put
it.
A lot of that weight on my quad, mm-hmm. I kind of target that leg that's bent, mm-hmm. like that front leg. Mm-hmm. Then the second workout, I just go full squat, butt to the ground, and up. Pride myself on getting real low. I do three sets of 10 to 12 with those. Sometimes I'll then go do a Romanian deadlift, which same thing, three sets, 10 to 12. And I don't know if I'm doing them right. That one's, to me, that's the squirreliest one of the bunch.
It's hard to do right.
It is hard to do right.
You need a watcher. You don't need a spotter. You just need a watcher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't need one, but it can help everyone.
Yeah, I always want to ask somebody next to me, like, "Hey, man, am I doing it right?" Mm-hmm. And then after that, I kind of like I move. Like, I'm like, that to me is like kind of the big event. And then I go over to the machines and I'll do like I do single leg lifts on like the quad raise, and I'll do one leg at a time. And I'll alternate legs, 10 to 15 of those, up and down each leg. And then I'll do the reverse where you lay
ham
on your
curl.
Stomach.
Yep. Ham curl.
Mm-hmm. And then I'll do some wall sits, 3 by a minute, you know, very basic stuff. And I'll do a little calf raise just to work the calf raise, because that's an easy machine at the end when you're just like sitting down and thinking about your life and doing the calf raise. And my question is, if that's my leg day that I do one time a week or so, it takes me about 45 minutes or 30 minutes or so, how do you rate that as a workout? What am I missing? And I'm just curious what you think about. Curious what you think about my routine. And I'm curious what... I'm curious... Mostly, I had this idea of asking you what the point of, is it to become stronger? Is it to repair? Is it to stay? Like, what's my goal? Like, what's my intention with these days? Is it to become stronger and to get more power? Or is it maintenance? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, like, man, it's so many things. And this is why this is a fantastic conversation to have.
So that's where I came into it. That was my setup. I was thinking about it last night at the gym and going, man, for endurance athletes primarily, I'm not talking about going and doing an Olympic lifting kind of competition. I'm talking about like runners, mm-hmm. you know, the
so
running
a couple
routine.
Things here to start with. The first thing is I am not an expert in this area because I'm a running coach.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of experience as an athlete and as a coach in a variety of different kind of places and formats and eras,
because
I lifted a lot in the 80s and the 80s and early 90s, and then I stopped for a long time. Then I got into the early CrossFit game real early in the early aughts.
Yeah.
That was
a fun time.
Oh, it's the heyday. Although
I wish I would have done it without the go big aspect. I wish I would have done it at really lower weight.
It's almost impossible.
The culture was just like...
The culture's changed
big,
a little bit
big.
Now. My wife just joined a local CrossFit gym.
Oh, cool.
She loves CrossFit. The thing that makes CrossFit so powerful is they're a movement, mm-hmm. and so they've got a cultural community base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. That was
and
so
they care
fun.
About it. And they care about improving yourself. But early...
Yeah, CrossFit made me switch from beer to vodka. actually.
Yeah. I mean, if that's a bet, if that's a win, I'm not sure.
In orange juice, man. I needed the vitamin C. I was very healthy when I was doing it.
But so I went through that period of early aughts of what I would call competitive CrossFit. Competitive now, because at the early days, they didn't have a CrossFit Games. So every day was a CrossFit Games.
Yeah.
But then they realized periodization doesn't really work that way. You're really going to burn people out. They were burning people out. And it's now a whole thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's got a whole world. I just met with one of my colleagues, Jeff Knight, who volunteered with Rogue AC with me, Rogue Athletic Club, my pro group that I had for a while. He was a volunteer coach, and then he came on and started coaching at Rogue, and then he took over all of my roles at Rogue and became like the head coach of Rogue, mm-hmm. basically. And then he moved off and went into wearables, and technically he worked for Under Armour and then worked into other wearables. And now he just picked up a gig working for basically thinking about big picture for CrossFit worldwide.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's just crazy how CrossFit's coming back into the world. My world, my colleague, and then also my wife. Anyway, mm-hmm. so I'm very pro CrossFit because they teach you how to do the exercises appropriately, because they're going to do weight big. So they know they're going to get after that, mm-hmm. right? So I had some experience with that. And then, I coached collegiately, and then I was in the weight room at a major Division I level school, the University of Texas at Austin, where weight training was serious. We had a conversation with Leo just the other day. One of his
When he said it too, it got me thinking about
his weight coach, Trey Zepeda, was amazing.
When
is
you
amazing.
Say that, I'm like, what is amazing? I need to know what amazing is.
So, anyway, so I have a background here, but mm-hmm. I don't write these into people's macros. I will always advise someone on things in general, but I'm not the big picture guy.
Good,
okay?
Good.
There's other people that do that, and mm-hmm. I think they do it well. But I have some philosophies as a running coach around what I think is most important.
That's great. Yeah, I think
so. We can start there. I just want to make that
too,
caveat.
Maybe answering the question, because most people I meet every time, friends in the running community, we're all doing it, but we all look at each other like, I wonder why. You know, it's like, what's it for? What are we doing here? And I don't think I'm not looking for the right formula necessarily, but I do think that baking in a little bit more intention as to exploring what to do, finding the right coach or finding the right technique, you know, and stuff like that is of interest.
If I ever went back in business, I would do everything in my power to bring you in as a co-conspirator in my business to open what I'm calling a running gym. I think there's a real market for a running gym. I've been talking about this for 20 years.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid to go take that step into it because that's not what I do full time, right? But I don't have the resources. So right. If there's anybody out there that's interested in partnering with Michael and I and creating the first, I mean, there are other running gyms that are out there, but like something like a running gym, that'd be really cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm into weird stuff too. Like I would be doing like Reiki, acupuncture, all kinds of movement stuff. I would do a wide variety. They wouldn't be just lifting weights, but anyway.
Like prehab stuff.
Prehab, rehab, psychological, spiritual stuff that's like balancing. Because let's reframe this cover. You're asking me, why are we lifting? Why is a distance runner lifting? When I could take that 45-minute hour window and put more aerobic work in. Why would I go lift?
Exactly.
Is that the crux of the question?
It is. When I and for sure, I got my first workout program from my brother. It was comprehensive. It was back and bis, chest tries, legs.
And your brother's buff. I mean, he's not. Yeah, and he's always not super big, but he looks really fucking fit.
And he always could get so fit, but he got that. He got his plan. The plan that I use, if I'm just doing purely, this is what I use like in high school and college, which was like, I go to the gym, I do this thing. Point A is where I am. Point B is getting strong, building lean muscle, and that was very easy to conceive with a well-rounded routine. But the second that you put 10, 15 hours of training a week in with endurance, it seems like I never recalibrated what point B actually was in driving, parking the car, going into the gym, putting the plates on the shit.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. subtle, but it's like I do it things like I'm still doing it in high school, but my mind's not a different, it's not in a different place.
Yeah, I think this is why this is a great conversation to have, because typically these conversations happen in podcasts where a guest comes on who has a particular point of view,
mm-hmm.
and it's usually siloed. Although I do think in the strength training world, the siloing is happening less. There's less of a super deep dive in just one modality.
Sure.
There seems to be much more of an interest in cross-modality and trying to create the kind of safe space. I think that, again, CrossFit is sort of... I think they were so deep and so narrow for so long that now they're moving. Anyway, so my view about strength training is it's absolutely essential once an athlete has reached, I would say, a threshold of about 30 to 40 miles a week. For those folks, because I know Michael's a triathlete, and those of you who are listening who are endurance athletes in the triathlon space, you just do the math on that. That's probably if you're doing sprint tries, you definitely need to be in the weight room because of some other stuff we'll talk about. But those people are doing like the half iron or the iron. It might not make sense to do your first time through. It might not sense to add that level of stress and challenge and difficulty. But eventually, because of the things I'm going to be speaking about in a second, you're going to really want to get into strength training and maybe toggling a little off your zone two or toggling a little off of some sort of high intensity power meter kind of stuff on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say what for triathletes, if they're listening, I think a lot of what's going on in the weight room is a lot like getting your stroke maintenance down in a swim.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of people go into the pool and they start swimming, but really what they should have done to start is to go meet with someone who knows how to help you pull your hand out of the water, how to rotate your body while it's your hands, arms out of the water, and how to put it back in the water smoothly, effectively, while still kicking and making sure that your planes are appropriate and all the things that are going on with swim mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mechanics of swimming, you can waste so much. So many people waste so much energy.
Yeah.
Way more than they do in
swimming
running.
Swimming is just...
Way more than they do in running. And yeah. The swimming matters because there's so much drag. There's so much drag going on that it's yeah. really critical to be doing it right. So it's like, that's why I was talking to swimmers. I'm not a triathlon coach, but I meet people and I'm like, have you gone? I'm swimming, you know, 5K 3 days a week. And then I'm swimming 8K 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, have you seen, talk to somebody about your swim mechanics? How's your swim mechanics? I have no idea. Spend the money.
Mm-hmm.
And get somebody to teach you how to swim appropriately and watch you and film you and do all those things because they matter. And then come back and then you'll be much, all your energy will be, you will save 25% energy on all the work you're doing and you'll get 25%, instead of working at what was 100% effort, getting a 75% return on effort, you'll now go in and put 100% effort and that'll now equal 125% of return because that's a huge return on investment. So anyway,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think of strength training exactly the same. Yes, it's you can get by without it. But if you want to really take the stakes up, if you really want to improve, and I wouldn't ask a first-time triathlete, just get in the pool and flop around and swim and struggle and suffer and figure it out. But if you're going to now spend, as you said, 12, 15, 20 hours a week getting after it, you should spend some time on your swim mechanics. For runners, you're going to spend 10 hours, 12 hours, 15 hours running, more than that. You need to be having some time that you're spent doing strength training. because there's a law of, this is, people are going to get really mad at me when I say this. There's a law of diminishing returns when it comes to aerobic development. That's not a real term. There's a law of diminishing investment when it comes to aerobic development. Because in order to get that, you have to keep doing it and doing it. And if you break down, I have an athlete right now who's trying to run 120 miles a week. She broke down. Mm. I know she's not, I know she's not lifting. There would be no way she could be running 120 miles a week and lifting and having the really professional job that she has, right? So it's a challenge. I mean, I can't speak exactly for that person, but I'd say, you know, there's a lot of times where that happens. So what's going on when we're lifting? Why are we lifting? Three basic reasons. This is the only thing I prepped for today because you told me we're going to talk about strength.
Yeah, yeah.
There's three different reasons. One is balance / economy. The running mechanics are extremely simple. You land on the ground, you push off the ground. You land on the ground, you push off the ground. You land on the ground, you push off the ground. Most important thing that happens in running. That has nothing to do with pace, has nothing to do with what your body's doing in the air, has nothing to do with what you're doing with your arms, has nothing to do with what you're doing with your head. All those things matter, but they don't matter to ground contact and push off. One plane, purely and simply straight ahead. And if you're on the road, there's extremely little variance to each foot strike. So you're now operating this high-end aerobic work in a living system, traveling many, 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 many reps of landing on the ground, and there's very little variation. Now, if you trail run, you've got a lot of variation, but if you're on the road, you get very little variation. By that, I mean your foot movement. You get some foot movement, but it stays pretty consistent. If you've got a camber on the road and you're, you know, you're on the right-hand side of the road running, you might have the, you know, one leg higher than the other, and there's a little bit of a play there, but there's not a lot of undulating terrain typically, except if you live in Austin where our roads are terrible. Then you
yeah,
have
well, I was
that.
Thinking Lake Austin Boulevard will tear your shit up.
But, and the moment that you feel your
just because it's got like a 3% grade on the side of the road.
And the moment you're thinking about that is the moment strength training would absolutely make a huge difference in that area. Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's so mono. I would just say it's like one channel, always one channel, never a change in channel, always the same channel. This is why runners who run 100 miles a week have huge aerobic, they're incredibly fit. They can step off a curb and be out for 6 weeks.
Yeah. I see
because they're not
the
very resilient because they're all in one channel. So that's the first reason you lift, for balance and resilience. Mm-hmm. So balance meaning making sure that any natural imbalances you might have, just reaching those. So there's a whole series.
So I'm already screwing it up a little bit on my routine because I could probably be incorporating
maybe
no weight, like a lot
we'll
of
talk
dumbbell
about that.
Stuff.
We'll talk about that in a second, maybe. But that's one area that you want to be considering. Mm-hmm. The second area you want to be considering is what I call, how do you say this? Wiring together, firing together. How's that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is neurological uptake. So getting a neurological uptick and expanding the channel to stereo for a runner. Mm-hmm. And that means a lot of nerves, tendons, ligaments, nerves all working. When you do a split squat, it's really, really, you know, when you're doing some exercise, this area is not being helped at all by your single leg machine quad raise, you know, your calf quad raise.
I'm still caught in strength land.
I think machines are worthless. Utter waste of fucking time. Mm-hmm. Unless you're rehabbing a particular injury and your PT tells you to do that because of a particular reason. But generally, everything you should be doing should be loaded at all times.
What about the adductor, abductor?
The only reason to do, yes, that's really good, that ad-ab machine, that machine that has the swivel head that moves. I did that all the time because it's very hard to hit that area. But now we have other ways to hit the area.
Cool.
So, but that's the way. So that a lot of what's going on there, a lot of what's going on with that neurological adaptation piece, this is what the work of J.D. Cherie is really great. He has a book. I highly recommend anybody if you're looking for references in this area. J.D. Cherie wrote Anatomy for Runners, and he wrote another work called Running Rewired. Cannot more highly recommend these two books because they talk about the importance of this going from mono to stereo with the running.
And does proprioception fall into that category?
Proprioception, this is where a lot of band work comes in. We're working with strength, with cables, on, you know, where you attach your ankle to a cable, your ADAP machine that you're talking about, mm-hmm. I wouldn't attach a cable to my ankle, because that's where my power's coming from, and I would be swinging my leg out or across my body standing, not kicking my leg and pushing out, because it's trying to simulate. For runners, we want to try to simulate the specifics of our event as much as possible while we're doing activities that are not exactly the same. So that's why I'm a big fan of loading, of being standing up and being loaded. And then the third area, okay, the third piece is pure power.
Yeah.
So this pure power piece is important, especially for people who are in the 5K, 1500, 800 zone. It's not as important for distance runners, for marathoners and half marathoners, Ironmen. I do still recommend it, because it's like why I recommend doing speed economy for marathoners. As well, it's not incredibly specific. There's power there. Getting power is important to how we evolved as a species. We didn't just walk around the savannah. We also dug rocks out of things. We climbed trees. We did all these other things. We pushed. We wrestled. We did all these other kinds of things evolutionarily. And so there's different kinds of modalities that are helpful. But that's probably less important. Now, there's a fourth area. I said there's three areas of lifting. There's a fourth area, which we have generally called core. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
Core, which people get really, really excited about. And it's good to do all that stuff.
Swimming does that for me in a big way.
Just trail runners don't really need to do it so much, yeah, because they're doing a lot of that cross-planal,
yeah, well,
all that other work.
The core is however you
and
get
kicking,
it, just seems to be.
And you're kicking,
yeah,
and you're doing a whole bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. But for runners, it's kind of important to do, especially people who move from, do trail running, or they'll go from a 5K to a marathon, mm-hmm. and they're like, they do their first two and a half hour run, and they're like, why are my abductors so sore? Well, because you're getting sloppy, and you're getting, yeah, tired. Mm-hmm. And so there's an aspect to that that's important, that's valuable. Now, there's other fringe areas outside of the weightlifting, which is like doing hurdle mobility, specific mobility, other things that people get into. But the vast majority of folks don't have time, energy, or effort to be able to put into those things. So in the three basic categories, and then the fourth category that I was using about core, there's very few runners that aren't highly attuned to that, especially the ladies. The ladies that I work with, and if I have a new person coming into my group and it's a woman, I'm pretty sure she's doing 15, 20 minutes of ab work 3 days a week without me ever asking. Mm-hmm. They're just part of their repertoire for whatever reason, when they were young as runners or a cultural construct. The guys are more like, oh, I do a plank and I do some sit-ups.
Yeah.
That's all I do. Yeah. But the girls are pretty focused on that. Mm-hmm. That's why they're better off. That's why, but anyway. But I'm going to leave that part alone about what that is, okay? So the balancing piece, I think is so let me just stop there, because mm-hmm. otherwise I'll take an hour. I'm just,
sure,
going. So let me just stop there and say so what I think you're doing there, it's a runner, is making sure they're balanced, making sure they've got they're uptaking as much new novel information as possible with the neurological stuff in the second category, and in the third category of pure power. It's good to be focusing on those things. This is why I think you need to lift two times a week, not one time a week.
Mm-hmm.
Runners, and I'm sure that many of the people that listen to this will nod their head in an understanding, but some people will be shocked at this. You runners, I always hear people, I run, I don't need to do any legwork. That's the fucking exact reason why you do need to do legwork, because your running has been doing in one plane all the time, no change. Runners need to do more legwork than anybody else does. They do. Now, cyclists maybe, but the cyclists are always doing clipped in and locked in and going, right? So maybe they don't, but runners, we've just got a lot of a jostling and other things that are going on. And so you really do need to lift effectively, because your legs are doing just one single plane. Again, let's go back to being in mono. One channel, only one channel. And we want to have cross-modal channels. We want a full stereo experience. So that's why I think we run. That's why I think we lift. That's why it's worth it. Now, somebody who runs higher and higher volume and neglects doing any of these three categories of strength training, what they're going to find is eventually, as they age, as they grab more volume, as they get aggressive, as they start to reach for those fruits, you know, they're going to extend their body beyond what it can handle. They're going to get hurt, and then they're going to get pulled off to the side. And then they start their rehab. If they get hurt enough, they get a rehab plan going, and then they start doing that rehab. And what they find out is, God, I'm so weak in all these other areas, because the you know, these PTs, they know what they're fucking doing. They're professionals. Mm-hmm. And they're gonna find your weaknesses because that's what they do. And every time they see a runner, they're like, oh, here we go. Fucking, these guys, runners are the worst. We're the worst. So that's what I would say is, like, that's why if you want to stay healthy and you want to improve, it's important. Where does it sit? Absolute beginner, don't lift. Intermediate level runner, get your volume where it needs to be, get good work on quality, make sure you understand the kinds of different lift running you're doing, and then start saying, where's my volume at? If I'm at a 40 to 50 miles a week, do I have time to lift? This is a real problem for a lot of people. When and where can I lift? I get that question a lot, but that's the reason why you lift, in my opinion. So I'll stop there, see where you go. And then I think the next step we should do is give you a scorecard on your lift. And then maybe talk a little bit more about those three areas and like what's going on in them and what's happening to them.
I always heard that take at least 72 hours, you know, before you go lift again, same muscles and everything. With running, we're using our legs every day. The thing that comes to mind is, if we pick the optimized day, in my case, the one day a week where I go strength train, it's typically on like, you know, like a workout day or lower volume mileage day or something, maybe a swim and a lift or whatever it is. Yesterday we did a 10-mile run and I went and lifted last night. It felt like a good time to do it. My legs weren't so fatigued. It wasn't after a 15, 16-mile long run. So I typically take some time off and do that. Are these two sessions, do you see them as the same intention, or are they working a different piece of that trifecta?
If I can schedule my strength training for my athletes, I put it on the same day, about 2 to 8 hours after a hard quality workout.
That seems to be when the body, for me, wants it the most.
There's two reasons for it. The first is, you want your hard days to be hard and your easy days to be easy, and if you're going in and lifting hard, then you're kind of splitting the baby.
Yeah, for sure. You're kind of building up a little bit too much.
And you're not going to go as hard in the lift, or something else is going to happen. And then the second reason is, there's a lot of hormonal things that happen when you shift modes. Mm-hmm. So when you get in the weight room and you start working in a different way, you know, the real simplistic, super simple science is you just drop some serious testosterone in your system when you lift, and you feel it too. You're really, really tired. You go into lift, you're really tired. You're like, I don't want to do this. I don't know why I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. Halfway through, you're like, boom, boom, boom. Maybe it's the soundtrack you got playing, mm-hmm. or watching other people, but then you get done with it and you're like, I feel like $1 million. Mm-hmm. Right now, mm-hmm. you need to eat and recover and sleep well and be ready to manage all that hard work. But that's where I usually set them. Never after a long run, never go into the weight room to lift in mode 2 and 3. So in neuromuscular recruitment patterning, do not lift after a long run if you're doing primarily that work, and absolutely don't do power work. You're just too fatigued. You're too sloppy. Hour and a half, 2 hour, 2.5 hour, 3 hour runs. You got to let that day that day's mm-hmm. already hard as it is. And you can lift the next day, which some people do. But again, in my cycle, what I do is Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday is a VO2 type workout or a threshold-y type workout. Thursday is a speed economy, fast.
Those are great
quick
days.
And then Saturday is a hard, long run. Saturday, the only thing I recommend people do after a Saturday is go for a walk with their dog. Mm-hmm. That's the best thing you can do, is go walk. But the other 2 days, I think you can get some real good work done. So that's where I would position them. Now, the pros, they lift 6 days a week, 5 days a week, but they're switching their systems. And they have really sophisticated programs. Most of these pros that are in clubs, and they've got a really sophisticated weight program.
Yeah, I would imagine that it takes a very,
because they're getting the 1%,
precise programming.
Because they're getting the 1%, man. Yeah. They're getting down. But as I said, I do think that not lifting means you're leaving at least 10, 15% of your overall improvement out there because you're not working on these areas. I think mm-hmm. it's really important to work. But just doing some work in a couple of different areas can really make a big difference. And then you just budget it to maximize what you can do. Some people can get in the weight room for 30 minutes. Some people, they can't afford a gym. Well, you don't have to. You can just go to your local sporting goods store and buy a 10-pound pair of dumbbells, a 25 set of dumbbells, and start there, right?
How do you feel about plyometrics?
Plyometrics sit in category 4 It's actually a different thing. It's another thing. Plyometrics are, my feeling about plyometrics is you need to have somebody who knows what the fuck they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So same with hurdle mobility stuff, where you see people stepping over things and stepping off of things and doing things like that. They're really valuable, but you need a program that makes sense and you know what you're doing and what are you doing.
This has got to be synchronistic to the priority, and the priority under this conversation is endurance running, marathon, you know, half 10K, like whatever it is. Like
high cost, low return. That's my
view. The priority is running. So what we're trying to do is not delineate.
And then getting in the weight room and hitting these three domains.
Right. So it's not about delineating and building strength merely. It's more about being interdependent of the day.
Yeah.
To supplement that work. Yeah. It's an interesting one. It seems like there's many ways to go about it. And you have a three pace system when you run, and one of the things you often say is, you know, you're always going to be working something.
You're usually getting some return on investment.
You're usually getting some return on investment. So a lift, you're probably going to get something. It might be conducive, it might be to the intention, it might, you know, so it's not necessarily.
Dude, I went in the weight room for the first 5 years. I went in the weight room was because I wanted to look good and have a big six pack. And do,
well, I still do that.
Shit.
You know what I mean?
So there's always ulterior motives when it comes to straight training, brother.
Yeah. I know that's the thing is, like, I feel like strength training is something that you have to reduce down to what it is for as opposed to what you want from it. It's the weirdest thing, especially in the endurance realm. I keep saying the endurance realm, but let's just call it the running realm. There's a lot of ego involved into the gym, and not in like the machismo, like get big way, but like, I feel like there are two types of folks at the gym. One is the folks that go in there and they have their notes, and 1 week they were doing, you know, 100 pounds, and the next week they want to try 105, and they're always building it against that metric. But this just seems a little bit different than that. This particular, when you use it in conjunction with your training routine, it might not involve those types of tangible metrics, or does it?
It can, it should, and that's something that we can talk about with these three domains and what they're doing. So in the domain of balance, okay, and prehab, what I'm suggesting here is primarily things that are how do I explain this? Band work.
Yeah.
You know, where you have a rubber band around your ankles and you're doing side steps and you're doing things like this. If you've had an injury and you've been in PT and you're likely to have an imbalance somewhere that physical therapy was trying to rectify. So continuing on some of the basic PT things you've done if you've been injured is a really good plan. Mm-hmm. But it's sitting in this category of balancing and resilience and balancing. This kind of stuff is really positive to do barefooted if you can. A little barefoot running is good with it. I have foot drills that I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. You can do a YouTube search for Rogue Foot Drills. They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. We've been doing them forever. Take you 5 minutes to do. Back when I was at Rogue, we did various videos of that stuff. It's really, really positive. But that stuff takes 10 minutes a day. And you can put that on a day that's not even lifting. But
that
you don't need to do it every day.
So easy to miss.
It is. And if you're watching Netflix and chilling,
yeah,
spend the first 10 minutes of your Netflix and chill doing a little bit of that
stuff.
That's
why I said the ego. It's like, how could this possibly, how do these,
yeah, I would
small,
never
tiny,
go into the weight room to do that stuff because I would waste so much time that I wouldn't need to drive to that place to do it. I could do it somewhere else. I could do it at the end of my easy runs. I could do it after a quality workout. Mm-hmm. All that stuff in that domain. There's a whole body of things that can be done in that space that are really, really helpful and really useful. Mm-hmm. The place I always recommend is foot drills is really important. Band work is really important. And then I would just say whatever your PT has you doing, because if you've been injured in the past, you have a neuromuscular imbalance that professional has probably already targeted and seen.
Sure.
So I would just start there, right? Mm-hmm. Just start there.
It's always the glutes.
Yeah. Usually they're not. But then, you know, has anybody ever made their glute fire. I mean, I always think this is so interesting. I'm not gonna get pulled off.
How do you fire a glute?
Oh Jesus! Like, yeah, I don't even get me going with that. All right. So in the second category of lifting, neuromuscular recruitment lifting, this is a science. This is where having metrics is really valuable and good. These are lifting with real weights, not in a not on a machine. Trying to get away from trying to get the real weights and getting away from any help. Mm-hmm. So any aid. So, you know, we said the squat bar that has the thing that moves on it up and down. That there's one or two exercises I highly recommend to have that with, but generally you don't want to use that. You want to be really focused on the movement of the various planes of holding that. You get that squat rack, that big bar behind you with mm-hmm. that weight on it. Then you step away from the bar and then you're doing work. Mm-hmm. Or you've got dumbbells or kettlebells or a variety of different things. And there's a lot of stuff you can do there. Yeah. Again, I'm going to recommend Anatomy for Runners by J.D. Sharee and his other book, Running Rewired. If somebody wants some insights on that, there's a textbook.
Okay.
It's the best. Start with Anatomy for Runners because you're going to learn about what's going on with the neuromuscular recruitment patterns and the things that are going on. And then his Running Rewired really helps you rewire together, fire together. That's appropriate for runners. Jay is a biomechanist. He was out in University of Virginia for many years and he's incredibly well respected in the field. Now he lives in Bend and he has his own biomechanics studio where he basically watches people and does stuff. So he's always focused on good biomechanics, but he's using strength training to encourage those biomechanics. Mm. I think there's only two places you can change your mechanics: sprinting, I mean fast running, and strength training. Mm. It's very hard to prove you're running through cues. It can happen, but it's very hard. Cueing came to our sport from sprinting, where cues are important, but they're not particularly good for runners. Now, hand positioning, arm positioning, sometimes those can be adjusted. But again, those are pretty low hanging. That stuff's like not as important as what's going on in that ground contact. Now, the third category. Now, there, what I recommendation is to talk about your schedule. Three sets of 10 is appropriate, but every couple of weeks, you need to do a max on mm-hmm. each of those exercises. And a max is not one single lift. This is the CrossFit max, which is 4.
Mm, yeah.
It's a 4 as a max because that's the way you can do it appropriately and you guarantee you don't hurt yourself. Not guarantee, but you really, really limit the chance you're going to get hurt.
Sure.
If you're going for one max, you're now in power clean, your power lifting category. And those guys, I mean, if you've ever watched a power lifting competition, you're scared to death that people are going to rip muscles off of bones and shit.
That's why I don't do the 4 anymore because it's scary.
But it's good to do. And you want to do a max. When I say my max, I don't mean the maximum you can possibly ever do. But you need to test. It's a tester. Mm-hmm. It's like a race. Where am I at with my fitness? Mm-hmm. Workouts can show you're getting better and you'll probably notice how much easier it is to do those lifts of 3 sets of 10 or whatever the case is. But then you want to occasionally come back and do a 4 set max just to push that envelope a little bit and then come back.
Gotcha.
And that's really helpful because then you've got a little bit of variety and you're guaranteeing there's some change there. Because this is the problem that happens in the weight room. People just sling the same weights over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Same lift, same weight, same number of reps, same anything. Human body does not operate that way. We are not fucking machines. We're living systems. We adapt to stress, not to the same shit over and over again. Once you adapt to the same shit over and over again, it's just the same shit over and over again and your body doesn't improve. So you're fucking wasting time. Is it better than... I'm not going to say it's not worth going to the gym if you're doing that. But I'll just say you're not maximizing the opportunity you have in the gym. Plus, you're tapping into this, I'm getting better in the gym. Mm-hmm. I'm getting better with these key core lifts that I'm trying to do. So lifts here, calf raises, single leg calf raises done in a certain way, Bulgarian split squats, Romanian deadlifts, hip thrusts where you're down and you're driving your hips up with weight. Bench press, great to do. Lots of these exercises, but those are the key ones. And then, of course, I just referenced those two books for anybody that wants to pay attention to that. Now, the third category, this is for super advanced and very much for short distance people, 800, 1500 meter, maybe your 5K runner. And these are really high intensity Olympic style lifting. So the kinds of lift, the same things, but you're really working all the time on power.
Explosive power.
Explosive power. And that stuff is, that's cross, there's a lot of that stuff is going on in CrossFit gyms.
Yeah.
And that's really good stuff, but you want to make sure that you're doing that for the right reasons. And that comes back to another thing. So those are the three areas. But man, I just want to bring back this idea of the mission protocol we talked about a number of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. If you're going into the weight room without a clear intention for what you're doing, you're missing a huge opportunity. So that those people taking crib sheets, if I were cribbing, I'd have my number of reps I'm thinking I'm doing and everything else. And I'm going to be like, what am I working on today? What was I working on in my quality workout today? I was working on staying with the trouble. When things get hard and difficult, how do I handle it? And I'd be bringing that into the weight room. Where am I finding difficulty? Where am I finding challenge? Where am I finding? Or if you've got specific difficulties in the strength, in the weight room, what are those things that you're working on? Make sure you're bringing an intention into the weight room. There's so much dead time, Michael. So much dead time where you're waiting. And what are you doing? You start bopping to the music, or you watch around to the meathead that's next to you, or the hot girl that's over there, and you're just completely off in some other random place, or you're starting to worry about spreadsheets and shit like that. No, have a nice little soundtrack on your headphones, whatever worked for you. Trigger in, pull in some intentions that you're really focused on trying to achieve, and make sure you're staying in the zone. And you can get 30 minutes, 45 minutes, you can get a huge bang for your buck, and you can reinforce some of the key things that are going on. So that weight room is not just for lifting, it's for your mind. It's the best place for mental engagement. And what people do is they waste that time. Like, you're already, you're imprisoned to the space of the four walls that you're in. Don't let the rest of the macho vibe or the hot vibe or the other thing to take you out of your zone for focusing in on what you're going to do. And now that ability to stay focused when there's a lot of residual like noise all over the space really makes you mentally tough. So you've got an opportunity to work on mental toughness at the same time. I learned this when I was in college at UT, that we would lift at the same times the throwers and the vaulters would lift. And these guys are throwing massive fucking weights around. Mm-hmm. The strongest guys in the sport are the throwers and the vaulters. Now, jumpers can be, but typically they've got to be a little leaner. So they've got to, but the throwers and the vaulters are super strong. And you'd see these throwers, there were two, one thrower and one pole vaulter. They taught me everything I know about the weight room, and they were the number one in their area all the years I was there at Texas. And they walked into the weight room and it was game fucking on. Now, the vibe was always grab ass and talk about girls and all this other shit. But they came in serious, and then they started recruiting people. By the time I left UT, the vaulters, the throwers, and the distance runners, we had our shit together. We walked in the weight room. Our coach walked in and he was like, holy shit, people are getting some stuff done in here. Because the vibe was, what are we doing? What are we trying to achieve? And what's happening here? Not, oh, we have to come in here and do this stupid shit. It doesn't make any sense. And man, we would get in and out of there so fast, and the energy was really, really high, and everything was great. And then we walked to the dining room and we grabbed ass there. We grabbed ass at other places and did shit, different things in different places, but not in that strength training space. So that's another thing I just want to highlight as a critical, crucial. When can you do mental training? In the weight room. Perfect opportunity, right between each of your sets. Huge bang for your buck. Really easy to do. Low level of distraction. I mean, lots of noise, but you can keep focused. And if you do that, you're going to be really, really tough. So that's my basic overview of the big picture of how I would think about and appreciate that. Again, I'm going to just say, if you're looking for specific exercises, you're looking for specific work, those two books I referenced are highly recommended.
How much of this to you is identifying areas in the training routine in terms of running? If I'm kind of becoming acutely aware of something that I'm not good at, for example, you know, power in a tempo run, how much of that should drive the intention of the workout routine? Or is it something that we go to, in your opinion, do we go to the gym to make that better, or do we go to the gym to, it's easy to think about strength training is a way to make something very specific better, in our running. Maybe it's even like you said, it's core or form sucks or whatever it is. Like we're feeling sloppy. How much does that drive the intention, or does the or do you see it as just a different area?
Like I think it's really hard to pinpoint.
It is. To me, that's why I asked that question, because it's very hard to...
I think you need a PT, a physical therapist, or a really, really experienced trainer, mm-hmm. Especially a trainer who might be experienced in sprinting and distance running, middle distance especially, because it's really... I mean, really, I said this early in the conversation, and I mean it. I just had a long discussion with two athletes over the last 2 weeks about this, and to a small group of my athletes, I had this conversation. People are really confused about running, Michael. It's extremely simple. All you do is push off the ground. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else. You don't have time to do anything else. You might, as I said, you might put your arms in a certain way, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. Everything that matters happens in pushing off the ground. And you have so little amount of time. So what I would say is the reason for lifting is that you get really, really good at pushing off the ground in a wide variety of different ways, because all of the things that are helping you do all those lifts are helping you gain resilience, muscle tone, have the lights turned on, and have a lot of power in all those areas that are doing all the little things to make sure that that balance is happening when you push off the ground. So I say it's really simple. You're pushing off the ground, but everything is happening autonomically. Everything's happening under the hood. You are not conscious of what's going on. So how are you going to be conscious when you're lifting? So I would say you would need to be an absolute expert to know what is actually being improved upon in the weight room. And there are people who do this, believe me. I mean, when we talked to Leo, you know, he was talking about, you know, what Trey Cepeda was doing. He was talking about Dan Paff, who's this incredible strength training coach who understands everything. He's one of the great track and field coaches in the world, and he understands what this stuff is. That guy knows. He can tell you if you're trying to do X, you do these things in the weight room and that will improve it. But I think the vast majority of people are going to need a crib sheet. They're going to need help. They're going to need a guide.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can either hire somebody who knows what they're doing. And believe me, there's not many on the planet.
That seems there's to be few and far between. Like people are more myopic about what the routine is. What
or you pick up J.G. Cherie's book and you do it with a partner. And this is the other thing I would recommend, lift with a partner. If you can pull it off,
yeah.
And then you lift with a partner and you bring your intentions together and you watch each other and you give each other tips. And then when you don't have to watch each other, you roll into your own thing. But then when it comes to certain key things, it's like it's a spotter. And a spotter is more than just making sure you don't kill yourself. A spotter is there to help cue you to the appropriate work that you're doing and to keep you honest. It's really hard to find somebody to lift, but anybody who is like lifting with a partner, like, makes a huge difference. It makes a huge, huge difference. Can't always happen, but that's where a guide like J.D. Cherie's books. And again, Jay has a whole YouTube channel. He shows you how to do all this stuff. You buy his book for $20 each book, and then he gives you all these resources online for it. And in that category of the first one I talked about, he also has this product that's just this board. It's called the Mobo board, and it's got this gap or where your big toe is, and it's like a Bosu ball, but it's on these little things, and you lift and do all these exercises on that ball, and it's hugely valuable. And all those resources, that's a $70 product, right? But you could do everything that J.D. Cherie has, except for going and flying to his lab and getting tested and checked, and he does all that stuff too if you want to in Bend. But I'm just a big fan of this guy's work because he's so open source. His view is it's not that hard. And I'm telling you, local PTs, they don't want to talk about this stuff. They want people to come into their offices. Mm-hmm. I'm like, can't we make a crib sheet? Can we make a cheat sheet? Can we make something really fucking simple?
Right.
And Jay's done it.
There's a lot of business around this stuff.
Correct.
And it makes it seem like it's not very accessible. The last question I have is, fundamentally, when you go and you lift, specifically for power, you're ripping muscles apart, putting them back together. And in this case, in the power realm, maybe not in the, you know, neuro uptake realm or the balance
realm. There's still breakdown.
There's some breakdown, yeah. But like when we're talking about like building power and strength, can we overdo it?
Usually our nervous system will stop you from doing that.
Is it okay to feel sore for like 2 days after and be yes. like, damn, I really,
especially early on,
really got it. Like,
especially early on.
Yeah.
But as you are, if you're 3-6 months in and you're getting sore, it should only be on the max day.
Okay.
The other days should be residual, maybe a small little bit of, there shouldn't be this huge DOMS situation.
So do you see it apples to apples, like running too many miles a week?
Very much.
And
it's actually bad mechanics.
Can you do too much breaking down of the muscles?
I think so. But I think just most people aren't going to have the time or energy or expertise to really overdo it the way they overdo running mm-hmm. because they're just barely getting in the weight room for 45 minutes.
It's
hard
tough.
To do a lot of damage in 45 minutes. If you know what I mean? It's like you have
the leg day is tough for a reason. Like it is just it on any other day, man. I can go in there and do upper body and life is good. But man, there's something about legs.
You have to concentrate.
It's the mind. It's scarier on leg day than anything else. That's why I sweat. Like before I even start, I stink. I sweat and I stink. And this is on my first set. And it's not because I'm tired. It's because I know that I've got to get everything so dialed in. Because if I don't and my attention is elsewhere, I've done a workout before where I was distracted and I was like in the middle of a rep and I look over. My neck is sore for like 6 months, like my back, because I like pull it. And that's the stuff that like I constantly am, you got to be so clued in to what you're doing. It requires so much on yeah. those days and the balance.
And that's why I think it's really hard to overdo it, because I think most people are sphincter, they're going to pucker before they get to that point. They're going to
it's
get
the
too
easier
scared.
One to be like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's the great regulator.
Yeah.
Of leg day.
The one thing I'll say about upper body, because we didn't talk about that at all, I'm pretty much a purist in this area. So I'm a push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, dips, and do yoga. And do yoga while you're doing push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, dips.
The classics.
Keep moving around while you're doing a push-up. Do a downward-facing dog into a push-up. Roll your arm through. Roll your arm back the other way. Come back up. Or do dips where you lift your leg and lift your other leg down. Or do a pull-up where you're kipping and you're doing, you're rolling through and you're doing it. But
aside from core, how important is upper body to you?
I think it's important. It's important for balancing and feeling good. I do think I see, especially in some distance runners, if you look at the best in the world, they're lean but ripped. So they can use it, they can move it, but they're just doing it mostly in a simple body weight process. There's not a lot of work done there.
There's got to be some activations too that like, it's like, you know how sometimes different blood arteries are used when you're working anaerobic versus aerobic.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
There's got to be some type of benefit to working the upper body just to synchronize the top with the bottom and just turn it on. From a metabolic standpoint, like, you know, just doing it might help with the bottom, because there's got to be something in the nervous system that assumes that that it's not just a waste of time to do upper body if you're using your legs primarily to go forward.
Yeah, but runners are not doing much. You know, a pitcher, a vaulter, a javelin thrower, they're doing things with their upper body. Runners are just balancing with their upper body. So, but I do think the fittest person wins. So, you know, I'm a big believer. Also, I think the upper body, if you look good, you feel good. So this is why I'm saying that idea of getting in the weight room to look good, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Not a bit. It's hard for your legs. It takes a long time for your legs to look really, really good mm-hmm. from lifting. But your upper body within about 3 months can look ripped. You can get it by doing, you know, just light stuff. And I do one thing I recommend for runners is getting the dumbbells and doing shoulder, like running arms.
Mm-hmm.
I think running arms are useful, but they're one thing I used to do. This is crazy. People are going to think I'm super psycho. When I coached at UT, I would ask the girls to carry, I'd bring a little box of rocks. I told them, pick out your rock today, put two rocks about the same size in your hand and run with them. And when you're tired and you're done, just drop them. But go for as long as you possibly can. That, to me, I came up with that myself. That's fucking stupid Steve shit, right?
I like that.
But like, the longer you go, and they would laugh about it and they would joke about it, and it didn't last. I think we did it for a year at the most. And then they just thought it was so stupid, and I just was like, it's probably not that big a deal. But I wished I'd kept up with it. I wish I had suggested it and recommended it all the way through. But it's like, pick up a rock and run with it for as long as you can. And then the nice thing is they're portable. Just drop them when you're fucking done. And then notice early on, they're nothing. And then after a little while, I mean, and rocks are a variety of different sizes. You can do a lot of different things with them. And they're at the extremity of your appendage. So they're down there near your fingers. So you're actually...
You ever run a marathon with a water bottle?
Oh, that's... But the problem with the water bottle is that...
Your shoulder is like... You're limping at the end of it. Like, it's crazy.
And you see people shifting hands all the time. Yes.
It's interesting how you carry yourself in your upper body. Yeah, that's fascinating, man. Like, one day we'll talk about... I know there's reasons why people don't train with a weighted vest. It seems practical that people would go out and do runs with a weighted vest, but a lot of people say don't do it because it's unhealthy. And I'm like, well, still.
Sprinters do work with vests a lot. So because of the load, the increasing of the load, the problem with the reason why people don't do so much of that kind of work is because we're working on efficiency and more than power in our long running stuff. So power is really not the critical juncture here. It's efficiency, economy, how efficient and economical
you are. That's where the conversation gets so many different layers, is efficiency versus power.
This is why I always recommend to people take a break. When you take a break, eat, gain 10 pounds, 5 pounds, 10 pounds. When you get back to training, you'll have a little bit more weight. But as that weight drops off, you feel fitter and fitter and stronger and stronger. And this is a whole topic of, this is a... canceling discussion. talking about weight in our community is really challenging, but I do think it's really helpful to gain a little weight. You know, our buddy Chris McClung at Rogue, every year, I was his coach for many years, and he would take a break and then he would gain weight and he'd always feel bad about it. And I'm always like, Chris, this is the best thing in the world you can do. And he'd come back, you know, 10 pounds overweight, maybe a little bit more. And he'd start, and then he had a protocol. This is what I loved about him. He was so methodical. So then he had a protocol. So he did a juice fast. It did the same thing. All the years I coached him, he did the same thing. And so he had this process, and then he'd see the weight come off, and then the mental toughness and the feeling of like, I'm fucking fit and strong and I'm powerful.
I love to get a little heavier before a training cycle.
It's really good for you.
Yeah, I mean.
It's also good for us evolutionarily, because that's how we evolved. We did all these hard, really hard things, and then we sat around for a very long time getting fit. And if we didn't, this is the problem with distance running, particularly when people stay at the same weight for so long, and when they get fitter and fitter and fitter, and they're down to, like, we're not really designed to be. Not many of us are designed to be below 5% body weight, body fat. Like, and many men at the elite level, they're at 2. And some women are down at that level. Like, it's not good to be in that zone for a long period of time. It fritches your metabolic system, like your hormonal system, your metabolism, all those things gets really fritzed. We do well with getting a little chubby, spending a little time chilling, relaxing, having a few beers, whatever your fun is, whether it's beers or vodka or ice cream or chips and salsa, whatever it is, whatever that is, you want those periods where you're stepped away and you're like having this recovery phase and you're enjoying yourself for a window of time, and then you come back into your training and you allow yourself slowly but surely to have that weight come off. And you know, as I mentioned with Chris, when he got to a certain point, he knew he was fit. And there was no denying that he was fit. And there was no one that could have convinced him otherwise. And it was how he felt in his body. And the power that comes from that. You know, I did the same thing. I think I mentioned to you before when I was in, somebody asked me, what's the single most important thing I ever did as an athlete in my career? And as I, senior year in high school, I choked in the cross country race. I literally threw myself to the ground. I choked. I finished the race, but I didn't win or get in the top five, and I think I was second or third the year before, so it was like pretty much coulda, shoulda, woulda. I mean, there were guys who were just as good as I was, and I maybe had lost, but I threw the race. I think I ended up 20th or something, and then my dad said, you need to have to do something different. He was my coach. Something's wrong with you. You gotta do something different. Because I didn't tell him I choked, right? He knew I did, but I didn't tell him. And that night I said, okay, for the rest until I will win the state championship meet in the two mile if I do three sets of 30 pull-ups every single night. So from November X to May X, 7 days a week, all the way through that period of time, I did three sets of 30 pull-ups every fucking night. There were nights I was laying in my bed at 11 o'clock at night. I'm not going to do it. Fuck it. Today's the day I break the streak. And then I'd say, do you want to be the state champion? I don't really care.
Yeah.
And then I would always just at some point in time, something would click in me. And that was like for the first 3 months. And then after those last three, 4 months, there I was getting them done early in the morning. Like it was like, no, let's get it going. Let's go. Let's get after it. And man, I'm not saying I won the 2 mile for that, but I knew when I was sitting on that starting line, I had given something up, something seriously. I'd done something not that specific, but really important to me to be able to do that. And I highly recommend those kinds of things. You know, those kinds of, mine isn't for everybody. And I don't know that I would ever do that again, but I would choose something.
To me, that's leg day.
Yeah, there you go.
To me, going into a race isn't necessarily about being stronger because I went to work out at the gym. It was more like, I also use it is that I know that I'm in good shape if I'm still going into the gym and doing the extra that I don't think I need. And if I stop doing it, that's when I know that I'm like too
slipping.
Tired.
You're slipping.
Yeah.
It's just you're slipping.
Well, man, that was a fun one. I know that there's a lot there. I heard Leo talk about it. I've been doing it, not wondering why.
I have a story to share. I'm pretty sure this athlete, there is a cautionary tale, though. I have an athlete who I've been working with for about 2 years. She's young, but she's really talented. She's got a really hectic life. She's in school, and her schooling is extremely challenging. It's a lot of stuff for her. And she, one of the things we talked about in her training was we'd got her volume to where it needed to be. She's been in my system for a while, and she's like, I think the next step for me is to do strength training. And I'm like, let's do it. She hired, based on my recommendation, she hired a trainer to help her show her how to do her lifts and how to do all her lifts and manage all her lifts. She's a former gymnast, so she has massive flexibility. And that's always a little bit of a challenge when it comes to lifting because that fluidity and flexibility, you want stiff muscles, a little bit of stiffness in order to run effectively. So we were working on that piece. Anyway, she's and this woman is, she's nothing if not diligent and nothing if not thorough. And she followed a very consistent protocol, consistently did it, but kept pressing and pushing and pressing and pushing. And she ended up with an injury related to, we don't know, we can't track it, but she's been incredibly resilient and helped. We didn't raise her weekly volume. We didn't change her quality of work, but she's not going to be able to get to her command performance race at Boston this year because she got hurt from lifting, basically. Mm-hmm. So the cautionary tale there is just be wary of trying to, and this person, I don't want to hurt, and she'll probably listen to this because she listens pretty regularly to this podcast. She didn't do anything wrong. She did nothing wrong. But it's always a danger when you're adding a new stimulus and stressor to your body.
Start slow
and take your time and just allow that to happen over a 9-month or 12-month process. And I don't think she did anything wrong. I mean, I was looking at her weekly. She'd send me her logs and I would look at what she was doing and I didn't see any problems. Turns out she had a little shearing going on in her hips. And so there was extra load there. And I think her biomechanics were changing because of lifting. Your biomechanics, you're going to stiffen up in good ways, and your biomechanics are going to get different. And then that's going to be a new load on your body. And
that
then
happens
you have to
me when I do the bike. I have all kinds of problems because I'm not, the only thing I'm not consistent at year to year is biking. Mm-hmm. I will be swimming and I will be running. But when I get on the bike and I start doing, you know, 10 hours a week, 8 hours a week on the bike, there is always, if I go out too hard and I always have IT issues, patella issues where it feels like it's wrapping under that patella. I've got like in the, you know, I guess it's like the third or fourth and fifth metatarsals. There's always some nerve things that come up from the bike. Like new stuff, man.
Yeah, for this athlete, it was really, really discouraging because she did, I mean, man, when I tell you she did everything right, she did everything right. And it was demoralizing, really hard. And for her, for sure, but for me too, because I just feel, always feel responsible.
Yeah.
And we've been so healthy throughout that whole period of time. But I do like to give that as a cautionary tale, just to say, there's no panacea. You have to be listening to your body, even, and just be careful with what you're doing as you're doing it, and pay attention to stuff. Again, I don't think that she, there was nothing that she did that could have changed, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But your body, when you're lifting, your body's changing, changing in pretty big extremes. And so just be aware that there's risks. And hopefully, one question this athlete has is like, will I get hurt in the same way again? And I'm like, highly unlikely, highly unlikely.
That's that run forever, Ambi Barefoot approach. It's like, shit's just going to happen.
It's a chance.
If it's, yes. It's where
we do risky shit.
We did
a whole episode on risk. I mean, we do risky shit. It is a risk.
But it doesn't,
distance
yeah.
running is not good for your health. Running 3 days a week, 6 miles a day is good for your health. Anything beyond that is not for your health. Yeah. It is not good for your health.
It's good for your mind, not exactly.
There's other reasons you're doing it. Don't
believe
get it
me,
twisted.
That is why I'm
don't
getting
get it
out
twisted.
Of long-distance triathlon for the unforeseeable future. It is not good.
It's not good for you.
It is doing things to me that that I need to change.
Yep.
It's not bad, but it's not all. It's not. I'm noticing things about my routine that I just need to take the foot off the gas a little bit, and you know, stop this like never ending pursuit of optimization, and just start kind of becoming attuned to where the body is today. And a lot of the times when we do these training plans and have these goals, like it's easy to quiet those voices. Be like, today would be a good rest day. This morning I needed to walk. I knew I needed to walk. I went to the pool, almost fell asleep in the pool. I was dragging everybody down in my lane. The workout was 4,900 yards and I finished 4,200. I was skipping reps. You know, I knew it. And I'm like, to me, that's the unhealthy part, is not exactly the activity per se. It's how to constantly have to wake up every day and to kind of say, you know, we need to go in this direction, or we don't need to go in this direction. And there, but you're working the mind on some and the body and others. And it's, to me, that's a fascinating part. But I also think that's why seasonality and taking breaks and not just saying I'm done with long distance triathlon, but just saying maybe just look as far as the next race. That's it. That's it for now. You know, if it calls down the future, then do that. But I'm looking forward to getting into more of half marathon stuff, man.
That's cool.
10K half marathon. Building,
you know,
the run group.
Men don't have the same, you know, the endocrine system, the way our body uses hormones and what's going on with hormonal stuff. Men are not as attuned to that because we don't have menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And women, they know right away when they're starting to have issues that way, because it triggers that way.
Sure.
They'll have effect. Mm-hmm. It'll affect one way or different directions. And usually they're really pretty keyed into that for obvious reasons. Men don't have that. You know, we're our cycles are solar more than lunar, and we're really a danger for overdoing it. And really in danger of overdoing it when we've got an engineering type mindset, a person.
We don't have that biological governor.
Correct. and some level of metric that we can see it. Now, if you're tracking your resting heart rate early in the mornings, those things, you're probably going to see indicators there. But we don't have the sort of, oh gosh, you know, a woman doesn't have her period. And there's two reasons for that. She's overtraining or she's pregnant. So like, I mean, they're going to be paying very close attention to it, mm-hmm. right? If they're sexually active, or if they're not, they're still going to be paying attention to it. So I do think, you know, men don't have that same sort of, and of course I'm vastly simplifying it for those ladies out there. Yes, I am. But I do think that men have a challenge of overdoing it
It's because it's psychological. Thoughts motivate behavior, and we're constant behavioral of our stimulus of our thoughts. But if what I'm understanding correctly, that you know, to be able to observe the thought, see it for what it is, and then make a calculated decision, it's just not necessarily baked into the monthly routine of the man to just check ourselves objectively.
We can stay logic. Yeah. We don't have to come into the body.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
so it's
women are more connected to their bodies in a lot of challenging ways, but there are also great gifts to that. And men can stay in their heads a lot longer and sort of things stay more similar. There's less changes to it. And women, they know this. Every month there's a significant change. And it's been happening since the dawn of the mammal class. So, you know, it's like, it's part of what happens. And again, I just say, men be wary. Exhaustion in men is usually a sign of significant overtraining. So when you're that exhausted, it's really bad if you wake up in the middle of the night now. So if you're just tired while you're running around and working around, sometimes that's good. Remember, let's just tell our listeners where you are in your cycle. You're at that 6 to 9 week we talked about in one of those other episodes. So you should, as what did I say to you? You should be tired.
This is the point where it was cool. It's like when the workout's done, I'm like, all right, I'm peaceful. My mind's working. Those are the things that I'm like, okay, everything's good. I'm good. I've got a really good mind right now, but man, like I can feel it. The workouts are getting like, okay.
Yep.
We just got to get to 70. Every time, though, 75% of the way through the session, I'm like, all right, life is good. But it's just getting to the 75% is like, oh, man, this
all
is
my
tough.
All
this
my athletes
tough.
This morning, who they race, some of my athletes raced this morning. I'm raced on the weekend, a half marathon, and then I shifted the workouts for those who raced to do something different. And all three of the ones who did it this morning only did two of the three sets. One of them because she was getting a little ill, another one because he decided before the workout even started that he was done, and another one because he got to the second set. Nobody else was doing it, and he was like, I feel like hammered horse shit.
Yeah.
So it was like, and all three of them felt a little guilty at some level, right? I could feel it on them, right?
Yeah.
The athlete who decided in the morning, he stated to me, is that all right, coach? And I'm like, of course it's all right. The one who was sick, she's like, oh my God, but why am I sick? I feel horrible about this. Is this going to offset my whole training? It's like, no, we'll be fine. And the one who was tired, he was a little less that way because he's pretty much been at this for a very long time. But his point of view was more like, yeah, I'm just tired. Like, but he looked at me like, and he was, if I'd have said, dude, one more set,
he'd be like, oh.
He'd have done it. He'd have done it. Okay. But that's where, because this is where you are in these cycles. Those folks running Boston, London, Eugene, Vancouver,
yeah,
whatever your Rotterdam, you should be like tired. That's what training is for. Anyway, we went off topic, but
oh, easy going. Good. Shout out to your buddy Tomek. He came and finished,
he's my brother.
I took my running group. My Wednesday group, I told him before we ran, I was like, I've been doing very little speed work. It's time. I'm going to start turning some things on. Y'all can join me.
He told me he shifted his whole workout for you guys.
4 miles out. And we finished at a 7:20, 6:45, 6:20, and 6 flat. And I was like, that's a free group for anybody who wants to come run. That's how it's done.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. It was fun to run with him. He was like, you kept trying to pass me up every time I went ahead of you. I was like, I have a problem. You won't pass me.
He ran collegiately. He's got.
I didn't even know I was doing that, but I was like,
oh, he did.
I'm constantly, because in my mind, I'm like, you're falling off. You're going to fall off. If somebody passes you, you're done. And I was like,
Tomek is as beautiful a people as you could ever run into.
Awesome,
he's awesome. He came over to my house on Sunday. That's another thing. Since we're just here rambling a little bit, you guys can turn it off now anytime you want to. But dude, this was the most exciting weekend of track and field as an American that I've experienced in a long time. The U.S. distance running hopes for the Paris Olympics are very fucking high. We have some real ballers. It was exciting. Americans, we won the women's 3K. I mean, won the world championship in the women's 3K against the reigning world and Olympic champion in the 5 and the 10, an Ethiopian. We had number two, so we got second and third in the mile. On the men's side, we got second and third, I mean, the 1500. We got second and third in the 1500 in a crazy event where the American men were leading with 5 meters to go, and a New Zealander just roared from the back with a crazy kick and just blasted everybody. And it was so exciting. I mean, I wanted the Americans to win, but it was so exciting to see a guy. It was such a good race. And then our 800-meter hopes, which have been, our women's 800 didn't perform very well, but we didn't have our best people there. We won the men's 800, which was a shock, and he looked amazing. And you know, it's just track and field.
It's going to be a fun year.
I think our sport is just elevating and elevating and elevating. We just saw Kipchoge and Sifan Hassan fail, so that's good for our sport when we see our perennial favorites get challenged, because that means there's really great talent and they'll have to get better. We lost Kevin Kipton, which is a serious loss for our community. He was going to be the first, in my opinion, he was going to be the first person in the world under two without all the help. But we did lose him. But anyway, I anybody that's listening to this, you know, in the other podcast I did, the Running Rogue podcast, Chris and I would talk about the sport all the time at the very beginning of it. But man, if you've never been a fan before, you've lapsed in your fandom of track and field, and It is the best time. And not just if you're an American. We have listeners all over the world. Like, the sport is just in fuego right now. It's all across it, from the throws to the jumps to the vault to the everything. It's just epic. And for those of us who are distance runners, I mean, dude, from the 800 all the way up to the 10K and then the marathon itself, it's going to be an epic, epic spring and summer. And you should be paying attention now. Shout out to Let's Run. If you want to figure out more about it, get to Let's Run. Don't go on their forum. The forum will make you crazy. but look at their front page and you'll get the news. And then they do the best job of getting the news to everybody in a really simple, easy way. It's free. It's a great resource. And
you should do a track and field culture episodes for the newbies.
Yeah, it would be cool. That would be fun.
We tried with John one time and we talked about it. But I think that from somebody who didn't do it in high school and grew up with it, and you know, and all that stuff, it's hard to understand exactly the totality of the dynamic of track and field.
Yeah, the different races, what's
and
going on,
how they work in the culture of the teams, typically speaking,
race
how
strategies.
Athletes go from race to race, why they go from race to race.
Yes,
and I think that would be fun. It's like Track and Field for Dummies episode.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Almost an idea, so that the layperson can, when they're watching the Olympics, we could tee it up for that to just really get people, it's even for myself, just attuned fully to what exactly we're digesting.
Somebody sent me a note today, this week, about how they went back and watched Leo's 2012 Olympic finish because of our episode with him the other week. So that's cool. Yeah, that's a great idea, Michael. We should do that. But we probably should end this episode at this point, since it's been going on for
rock
a while.
Rock and roll. That one went by pretty fast.
Godspeed, y'all.